citizens and non-citizens, and it leads to great discrimination, even towards totalitarianism.
I think that our government is doing the same thing countries that collaborated with Nazi Germany did in the 1940s.
The COVID pass for civil servants also enraged thousands of Danes who came out in Copenhagen to call on the government to cancel the measure. The World Health Organization is warning that Europe is the only region in the world with surging deaths and that the virus could kill 500,000 more people by February. 70 million infections, 1.6 million deaths, and still counting. For now, it seems that governments across Europe are facing the double dilemma of keeping the protests in check and bringing the fresh wave of infections under control.
Yemen's armed forces carried out another massive retaliatory attack against several targets in Saudi Arabia using 14 drones. The targets included Aramco refineries in Jeddah, as well as several military sites in Riyadh, Abha, Jizan, and Najran.
In response to the escalation of the Saudi-led aggression and its crimes and siege, our armed forces conducted the 8th operation codenamed Balance of Deterrence by bombing several military and vital targets of the Saudi enemy. The armed forces have proven their ability to carry out more offensive operations against the Saudi and Emirati enemy within the legitimate defense of our people and homeland.
Experts say this operation comes in response to Riyadh's recent escalation in Marib and the fresh air strikes that killed civilians, including children, in Hodeidah and other cities.
This large-scale operation came amid the ongoing aggression and in response to the recent Saudi escalation. Saudi-led coalition is trying to pressure our forces to stop their progress towards the city of Marib by targeting civilians, and this prompted the Yemeni army leadership to accelerate the implementation of major operations deep inside the kingdom.
Recently, the Saudi-led coalition has escalated its air strikes across Yemen and killed more civilians, including children. However, Yemen's military has vowed to hit back at those killing Yemeni civilians.
The Yemeni army has given a stern warning to the Emirati regime, saying it is capable of expanding the range of its attacks to include targets deep inside Emirati territories. Yemeni say their army should continue its operations until the war is stopped. عبد اللطيف الوشالي صنع.
The UK government has announced plans to declare the entirety of Hamas as a terrorist organization. In a move led by Home Secretary Priti Patel, supporters of the group could face up to 14 years in jail under plans announced on Friday.
Previously, it was just the armed wing of the Palestinian organization which had been prescribed under the Terrorism Act 2000. However, the new ban will also include the political wing of the group, which currently serves as the democratically elected government in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Following the announcement, criticism came in thick and fast online. Patel's close relationship with Israel was one of the main points raised.
It's not really a surprise, considering where this prescribing is coming from. Look at the UK. Look at the UK. It's an imperial power that refuses to acknowledge the damage caused by its empire's past. You know, how many countries have had to struggle against the United Kingdom for their own independence? So it's no shock that this prescribing statement is coming from the UK government, and it's no shock that it's coming from this current Home Secretary, Priti Patel, who, do not forget, once tried to give international aid money to Israel's army.
Why such a thing would happen? And the only sort of explanation is when you look at the Home Secretary's history, that she actually undermines the procedures and policies of British government, her own country, and had a secret meetings with the then Prime Minister Netanyahu, and she was removed because of that. So she has actually shown she's more willing to do things against British interests and in British policy in support of the State of Israel.
Israel welcomed the move as a significant decision. while Hamas accused the UK of supporting the aggressors at the expense of the victims. But the move would require approval by Parliament first. A prescription order has been introduced, with debates and a vote expected to follow. If passed, the law will come into force on November the 26th. Robert Carter, London.
Justice system in the U.S. in the spotlight after a Wisconsin court cleared homicide charges against white teenager Kyle Rittenhouse. He was in court over his fatal shooting of two men and injuring another during anti-racism protests in Kenosha, Wisconsin in August 2020. The court ruled that Rittenhouse had acted in self-defense. It rejected the argument of prosecutors accusing the 18-year-old of provoking violence during the Kenosha rallies.
It's been a long day. It's been a long 3 weeks. We're very happy with the verdict. We're happy that the jury took the time, put in an incredible amount of effort.
Gun rights supporters welcomed the verdict, too. Former President Donald Trump also congratulated Rittenhouse and defended the shooting as self-defense. Republican lawmakers were happy, too, with Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson saying justice has been served. But others do not think so. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, a Democrat, believes to call the verdict a miscarriage of justice is an understatement. And the victims' friends say they are sad about what the system has done.
I am, like I said, not surprised at what happened here today, but I am heartbroken.
Several civil rights and racial justice groups denounced the verdict as a travesty. The American Civil Liberties Union says the trial highlights an urgent need for reforms to both police and the legal system. And gun control advocates warn the verdict could inspire a new wave of armed vigilantism. President Joe Biden, reacting to the verdict, says it leaves many Americans, including himself, feeling angry and concerned. But the jury has spoken.
I stand by what the jury has concluded. The jury system works, and we have to abide by it.
Biden wants everybody to be peaceful as people fill the streets across the U.S. to protest what they see as the failure of the justice system. Unrest broke out in some locations. Commentator Kyla Papuche says Rittenhouse's case shows increasing polarization in the U.S. and eroding trust in the government there.
It is also a foreshadowing of the deep division, the polarization that is increasing and getting worse in the United States. There is more growing apathy, distrust, and zero confidence in every thought facet of the state and the United States government, not just the judicial system.
Rittenhouse has also reignited debate about gun rights and the boundaries of self-defense in the U.S. As critics remain unconvinced and people are on the streets, the standoff over the American gun culture, racism, and vigilantism appears far from over.
Tens of thousands take to the streets of the Austrian capital ahead of the nation's fourth general lockdown, affecting the vaccinated and unvaccinated alike.
This is just one of several rallies taking place across the city just the day after the government announced that vaccinations will become mandatory from February.
Around 2 million of the country's 9 million residents have refused to get vaccinated.
I've not been vaccinated, and I believe this is a bluff on the part of the government. They want to put people under pressure. When vaccination becomes mandatory, I will stay at home. I believe everyone should be able to make their own choice.
I'm here because I'm against the vaccination for everybody. I want to decide myself. It's my body, and so I don't want to tell anyone to me that I have to go to vaccination.
The federal government has blamed the right-wing opposition Freedom Party, the FPÖ, for fueling public anger at a time of national crisis. Police forces confirmed that right-wing extremists, including convicted neo-Nazis, had taken part in the rallies, which remained largely peaceful, despite several instances of clashes and arrests. Austria is now reporting well over 15,000 new infections a day, with the total death toll almost reaching 12,000 people. Health experts say without compulsory vaccinations, the country will only stumble into new lockdowns every 3 or 4 months. Omaleski, Vienna.
As the clock is ticking for a new round of talks between Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal, Washington is showing more signs of unwillingness to settle disagreements despite earlier comments made by U.S. officials. On Thursday, Washington announced new sanctions on six Iranian nationals and one entity, accusing them of intimidating and influencing American voters during last year's presidential election. Iran's foreign ministry condemned the new sanctions as illegitimate and baseless. It said the new bans are a continuation of the failed maximum pressure policy adopted by the previous U.S. administration. Tehran also highlighted Washington's long history of meddling in other countries' internal affairs and playing a blame game to deceive the American public. Analysts say there is no evidence of any interference by Iran in the U.S.'s 2020 presidential race.
There's no evidence whatsoever that Iran or Russia had any meddling, any interference with American elections. The only meddlers in the election was really the Democrat Party and the Mossad and the Israeli intelligence operations and the CIA. They've been perfecting these programs for over 15 years, and they've undermined the elections in other countries, such as Ukraine and Venezuela, and that was admitted to by people like John McCain and John Bolton and Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. These elections in America have been farces and completely manipulated by the technology that the U.S. developed for influencing and corrupting other elections. But they are attempting to constantly brand Iran as a threat to the United States and trying to whip up frenzy in the American people.
U.S. President Joe Biden and his Democratic Party repeatedly criticized Donald Trump during his term for his way of dealing with Iran and withdrawing from the 2015 nuclear agreement. But ironically, since he came to power, Biden persisted in his predecessor's so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran and even imposed more sanctions against the Islamic Republic. This is why U.S. media and officials have admitted that the campaign against Iran has failed. Tehran held several rounds of talks with the FIPOR Plus One group between April and June with the aim of removing the sanctions, but no breakthrough was reached. Now, as the new round of talks scheduled to start on November 29th draws nearer, the U.S. measures against Iran further question Washington's sincerity about the issue, regardless of which party is at the helm in the White House.
Rights groups and families of missing persons held a press conference in Karachi to once again voice their grave concerns over the non-recovery of their loved ones, slamming the government for its lack of seriousness in their recovery. Last Saturday, families of Shia missing persons changed their direction towards military offices known to be the real powerhouses in Pakistan. Victims' families are outraged over the law enforcement agencies who they now accuse for clamping down on their right to protest. They are calling on the government to prosecute those responsible for abduction of their loved ones in the court of law. The family says state institutions are open for talks with Takfiri terrorists who have killed over 70,000 Pakistanis but are not serious to recover missing persons.
From 2009, we are protesting for the safe release of my father, and I have knocked every door of justice to the Supreme Court, High Court, and on the Commission of Enforced Disappearance, but I didn't get any positive result, or yet I still don't know where my father is.
The first post-9/11 reported case of enforced disappearances was Dr. Afia, who was kidnapped from Karachi along with her three kids in 2003.
Those who at the end of the day come for the agreement, those who at the end of the day come for the negotiations that we have your men and we'll release them, let's say after 2 months, after 3 months, those are the real people. These agencies, these people who should not be named in this country, these people who are above the law, who are beyond the law, these are the real authorities, these are the real officers whose job is to run this country, and actually they are destroying this country.
Enforced disappearances is a chronic human rights violation in Pakistan, with more than 7,000 complaints of enforced disappearances since 2011. where the real number might be much higher than the official figure. Mohammad Turi, Karachi.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Get up. Good morning.
Good morning. Your captain is speaking, and we are currently cruising over Iranian skies.
شهید بهشتی مسافرین گرامی خواهشمند از جهت تعیین مسیر به تابلوهای راهنما توجه فرمایید.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How is everything?
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day He appointed for a rising. To Thee belongs praise, for Thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst Thou willed, Thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to Thee belongs praise, for Thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Iran has urged IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, not to be influenced by certain countries' political objectives. Iran's spokesperson made the remarks, during which she also hinted at the upcoming visit of Rafael Grossi, head of the IAEA, to Iran, saying, quote, I hope this trip would be constructive like the previous ones. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at present and previous instances where the IAEA has given in to pressure when it came to Iran's nuclear file, and if this time around it would act more constructively. First, let's talk to Tomaleski, who joins us from Vienna. So this upcoming talk, you've had Iran make some statements. Iran has, obviously, its own concerns when it comes to the IAEA and how it has politicized by becoming more involved than its boundaries. Can you explain how that has been the case?
Yes, of course. Let's just see what the issue right now is. You know that the agency has said that since late February 2021, the amount of access that the agency has had to Iran's facilities has been dramatically reduced. But this has nothing to do, of course, with the safeguards-related commitments that Iran has. This just means verification and monitoring of Iran's JCPOA-related commitments. That's, of course, because the status of the JCPOA, it hangs in the balance. We don't know how it's going to turn out, and Iran, based on its own internal laws, decided to restrict some of the access, unprecedented access that it had given to the agency. What the agency is now concerned about, and it has said it's concerned about, is the continuity of knowledge. So it's saying that if and when the JCPOA is back in place, the agency would have to, of course, continue this verification and monitoring work, and in this stage, it needs to be able to know what is happening in order to have that continuity of knowledge. But as you said there are complaints raised by the Iranian side when it comes to attempts, they say, by certain countries, the US, the Europeans, sometimes named it directly, for trying to sway the IAEA or turn it into a political organization or influence decisions that are being made by the IAEA. These include, for instance, in a leaking of confidential documents that have been supplied by Iran, the fact that their agency stops from directly condemning Israel for sabotage attempts and attacks against Iranian facilities, and also putting on the agenda what Iran says are unsubstantiated allegations against its nuclear program, and creating a political fire when it comes to Iran's activities. These are just some of the issues that I'm quickly pointing to. But of course, this visit that Mr. Grossi is going to have coming just ahead of the IAEA board session on Iran and the upcoming talks on the JCPOA. A lot of people are saying how Mr. Grossi assesses this visit is going to directly impact the atmosphere of, and the trajectory of both the IAEA board session and the JCPOA talks.
Okay, thank you for that. Komolensky there from Vienna, many thanks. Joining us for this edition of The Spotlight, we have historian and investigative journalist Tony Gosling, who joins us from Bristol. Also joining us, writer and political analyst John White, who joins us from Edinburgh.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Tony Gosling, let me start with you here and get your reaction to what the spokesman for Iran's foreign ministry has said. He has called on the International Atomic Energy Agency not to allow certain countries to abuse its name for the sake of achieving their own political objectives. Whom or to what is he referring to?
Well, look, it's quite obvious in something as sensitive as atomic energy that the International Atomic Energy Authority is basically walking a tightrope. So it's really, really difficult for them to please everybody, probably impossible. So they do have to look into, say, for example, if the Israelis give them allegations that they say that, that there is evidence that the Iranians have broken various agreements, then they have to look into those, however much they may not necessarily believe them. And so, you know, they have to show to the whole world that they're trying to be even-handed. Having said that, you know, they are, in as many other organisations across the world, not least of which is FIFA for football, you know, and the athletics organisations and the United Nations itself are being fought over. So these organisations, there are attempts to, you know, create coups within them in order to take them over for, generally, for the, you know, to push the influence of the West. Mainly, I think the West has been most proactive in trying to sabotage these organisations and take them over, infiltrate them, etc. And also, we get a lot of spin here in the West. So, for example, the IAEA say things like, you know, we've had very good relations with the Iranians over the years. Then that will not be reported, I'm afraid, anywhere in the West, because it's a positive comment about Iran. So the International Atomic Energy Authority has got a really difficult job to do here, not only in showing both sides, in fact all sides, that it's prepared to take everything, any evidence that they give, seriously, but also in trying to keep its own independence. I mean, that's one of the most difficult things. We've seen, for example, with the UN as well, that you know, people with lots of money can come along and say, "Hi, UN. Hi, IAEA, we can help you out with a, you know, great deal because we know you haven't got much money," and then, of course, that's when the problems can often begin. So I actually feel quite sorry for the IAEA. They've got such a difficult job to do here in Vienna. I think we've got an even more difficult task, which is to make sure that this 2015 JCPOA is re-signed. And it's not just a piece of paper.
Sure.
Let's start at the beginning, because it is the most important piece of paper on the planet, I'm afraid, and that is because it is stopping any kind of progress towards a Middle East war between Israel and Iran, which Israel is likely to start if it happens, and of course, Israel is a nuclear-armed country. So that's why this piece of paper is so important.
I see. Well, let's see here. John White, to use the words of Tony Gosling, The IA is pretty much walking a tightrope. It has to show a balanced approach when it comes to this. Do you think that the IEA has used a balanced approach? And do you agree with how many have said that Iran's nuclear case has been politicized by the IEA and that it has been influenced?
Well, indeed, good evening. The growing crisis within the larger crisis is are questions over the legitimacy of organizations such as the International Atomic Energy Agency and its sister organization, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, OPCW, vis-a-vis Syria. And so until those questions are resolved, countries and governments that exist without the US stroke Western orbit, such as Iran, such as Syria, such as China, such as Russia, such as Venezuela, etc., have just cause to question the actions of the IAEA and to lose confidence in its ability to act as a neutral arbiter in these very, very serious matters. And indeed, these organizations are being corrupted by the huge pressure being placed upon them by Western governments, especially the US government, which is trying desperately to hold on to its hegemonic status in the world. And so this is the growing crisis within the larger crisis, and until the smaller crisis is resolved, the larger crisis cannot be resolved.
It's very odd to use, for lack of a better way of describing this, Tony Gustling, when you take a look at why Israel comes and tries to present a case against Iran, when the facts prove otherwise when it comes to the inspection that the IAEA has done on Iran's nuclear facilities, with Israel not a party to the NPT and not open to IAEA inspections or any type of inspections of its nuclear facilities. Do you agree?
Well, yes, of course, it's hypocritical. And I think it's also worth reiterating, and I'm afraid the IAEA and the media in the West here don't seem to take much notice of the fact that the Iranian state has issued a fatwa against nuclear weapons, which is saying that these could not be justified in use at all because they would bring in so many innocent casualties, so many innocent people would die were they to be used, as of course we've seen when they've been used in anger at the end of the Second World War in Hiroshima and Nagasaki by the United States, who, it must be said, did not really need to use those weapons at the time. And so it's rather rich for the United States to be saying that the Iranians to start trying to cast judgment around the world about who can and cannot use nuclear weapons when they used them without really a justified cause back in 1945 to kill hundreds of thousands of Japanese people. So this is a very important a very important edict issued by Iran saying that there is a religious fatwa against nuclear weapons, because if the Iranians secretly were to be manufacturing nuclear weapons, they would be going against their own faith, their own republic, etc. And they're very unlikely to be doing that, and they would be basically shooting themselves in the foot, so to speak. So there are all sorts of aspects to this which do not sit very well in the international media, which is very biased towards the United States. And I think it's also worth pointing out that we've got I don't talk about the prospect of war and nuclear war in the Middle East lightly, because we have in the United States and in Great Britain a very, very powerful Israel lobby, which is incredibly well funded. We had an Al Jazeera program a couple of years ago which showed the extent to which the Israel lobby in London and the political attaché, Shai Masoff, was prepared to use hundreds of thousands and even millions of pounds to bribe his way into the Conservative Party, into the Labour Party, and he even succeeded in having Alan Duncan, who was a defence minister, mm-hmm. removed from his job, who was pro-Palestinian. So we've got a very, very powerful behind-the-scenes Israel lobby in the United States and Britain, and actually in many other countries in Europe too. So that makes this much more urgent, because of course the Israelis know they can only get away with a preemptive strike or a false flag attack with a nuclear weapon or such sort of thing if they had some sort of backup within the European powers and the United States. So we've slowly but surely moved towards a potential hair trigger here, and that's why this piece of paper being signed, the JCPOA, is so important, and why the IAEA has to do a balanced job. To be quite honest, I am not sure as to the latest developments with the IAEA, whether it's being balanced or not, but I've seen in the past that they have made statements which are seem to be against the Iranians. But I think with something so important, we've got to be very careful about pointing the finger at the IAEA right now.
Well, let's use an example of whether the IAEA has been balanced or not. I'm going to zoom in on Rafael Grossi here. John White, in an interview with AFP, he claimed that the agency had no contact with the new Iranian administration to discuss some issues related to Iran's nuclear program. Now, that goes against the frequent contact that it has had with Iran's permanent mission and acting representative to the international organizations in Vienna over the past months. Is Rafael Grossi being influenced here? Is he being directed?
Well, of course he is. This is about hard power politics. We keep hearing the term the rules-based international order. That's bunkum. That's for the consumption of the masses. It's all about hard power. Stalin said it best with the clear-eyed logic of which only dictators are capable. How many divisions does the Pope have? This is what this is all about. It's about maintaining an imbalance of power on the world stage between the West and its allies and those who are running counter to the Western hegemonic agenda. And so the US administration under Biden has proved less to be the change candidate that he promised on the world stage and more a continuity candidate, more trying to continue the Trump agenda, using these upcoming talks in Vienna to try and leverage concessions from Iran. I have nothing whatsoever to do with Iran's nuclear program, but everything to do with the regional agendas of the Saudis and the Israelis. That's what this is all about. Until you understand that, you understand nothing about what's going on in the world today, especially vis-a-vis Iran and its dealings with the U.S. and its allies on the world stage.
We're looking here at the upcoming talks with P4 Plus One, Tony Gosling, for the lifting of sanctions that is going to happen. The Board of Governors is going to take place in a matter of days. And, of course, you have the Rafael Grossi who's going to visit Tehran. And mind you, based on my last question, when Grossi made that statement, he visited Iran on November 22nd, and he said, I've had no contacts with Iran, with the new administration. How is this going to affect the talks with the P4 Plus One for the lifting of sanctions in the assessment that the IAEA makes on Iran?
Well, that sort of statement, I'm afraid, is very difficult to believe, isn't it? And, of course, if the IAEA are going to come out with statements like that, then I'm afraid it reduces their credibility. And, you know, we've seen over the years, haven't we, that there's been all sorts of inspections, including those in Iraq, by people like Scott Ritter during the run-up to the illegal 2003 Iraq war, where nations have opened up their countries to inspections, international inspections, and then found that welcoming and honest attitude abused by the West. So it's, I think, very good that the Iranians have made sure that their doors are open to the IAEA, but I think it, of course, makes sense to be quite suspicious of them. You know, particularly, as I say, because we have a momentum building, I believe, for some sort of conflict to go on in the Middle East. I mean, this has really been brewing ever since I first started as a journalist back in 1990 with the first Gulf War, with the massive intervention in Kuwait, and which was really just a trick, wasn't it? Where the Americans conned, using their ambassador April Glasby, conned Saddam into thinking, oh, well, if you go into Kuwait, the Americans won't do anything. So these, I'm afraid, people remember these confidence tricks by the US diplomats, and they realise that actually what's going on at the heart of this is something much, much deeper. A real interest, and I mean, what we're looking at, I believe, today is something as gross as the medieval crusades. A Western and a European, and of course the Americans weren't around in the original crusades, but the Europeans most certainly were, and they managed to fail to get hold of the Middle East through their Knights Templar and the Crusaders back in medieval times. I think they're having a second go to try and control the Middle East. And of course, there are many Arab countries, not least of which are the poor Palestinians who are suffering under this, who would like to see them out. But many of those Arab countries, including the Gulf states, of course, are now really in bed with the Israelis and the Americans. You know, so we have a very, very dodgy situation, a dangerous situation that's developed.
Sure.
The JCPOA and the IAEA round has to go well in order to make sure that everyone can sleep easily in their beds at night, knowing that we're not going to get some news in the morning saying there's been a massive conflagration going on between Iran and Israel, or Israel and Syria, etc. And of course, that sort of conflict would drag in the superpowers, and that's why I think it's most important for people around the world to realise is it wouldn't just be a localised concern, because Russia, of course, and the United States have got big interests in the region. They wouldn't just allow a little fight.
Well, it wouldn't be Iran doing the offensive moves here, because Israel not only has attacked Syria, John White, on repeated occasions. You're looking at the fact that it has sabotaged Iran's nuclear facilities, including the most recent attack on Karaj. I'd like to point out to you, John White, this header from an Israeli periodical, which says U.S. officials warned Israel attacks on Iranian nuke facilities are counterproductive. It just came out today. It says Israeli officials reportedly dismissed U.S. warnings that attempts to slow down Iran's nuclear program with sabotage are causing Iran to speed it up. What do you think about this headline?
Well, it's the drumbeat to war, isn't it? That drumbeat is sounding ever louder. It's emanating from Tel Aviv. Israeli officials will see that Biden administration is historically weak and they're trying to bend it to its will. They'll be coming up with all sorts of false intelligence to try and make the case for airstrikes, for attacks on Iran's nuclear facilities. This has been ongoing for quite some time. Netanyahu was obsessed with the Iranians. But unfortunately, he was not able to make that case sufficiently to pass muster with the Pentagon, although Trump probably was keen to go ahead and do and carry out such airstrikes, given that he was a man who was very much influenced by vanity and by appearing popular and a strong man on the world stage. But it depends on how firm the Pentagon holds against this agenda. There will be various voices within the Pentagon who will be gung-ho for such an airstrike, others that will be opposed to it. So there's a lot of tension taking place within security military circles in the US, but we do know that the Biden administration is not in any position to withstand pressure from the Israelis and the Saudis beyond a certain point. Domestically, it's very weak. It's consumed with culture wars at home, and it's unable to carry out the agenda that it came into power promising to carry out. This ultimately is going to be a litmus test for the Russians, the Chinese, and the European powers. What they do in the next few weeks and months will determine the fate of the world. I don't say that lightly. We are at historical crossroads when it comes to the future of the world, and the Iranians are holding firm, because this is not about any supposed crimes or any supposed activities the Iranians are taking undertaking to undermine the Middle Eastern stability. It's all about the Israelis and to a lesser extent the Saudis. Israel is a rogue state, and until the world wakes up to that fact, then there will never be security, not only in the Middle East, but in the world entire as a consequence.
So if we have reached that point, do you think then, Tony Gosling, that the IAEA report and the Board of Governors and its assessment on Iran is going to be free and void of any exaggerations when it comes to Iran?
Look, I would very much doubt that, actually. And look, we've got many, many flawed organizations. The IAEA is flawed. The United Nations is flawed, particularly the Security Council. The BBC is flawed, very flawed, my old employer. But they're all we've got. And so we have to try and work with these organizations. Whilst there is a shred of integrity left in them, we've got to work with them, I believe. I think it's also worth pointing out that the United States did not just leave the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the Iran nuclear deal. They also imposed sanctions. They didn't need to do that. They could have left the deal and then attempted to renegotiate it, but they did a double whammy. They started to impose these sanctions, which they didn't just impose from the United States. They also started to take to court countries all around the world that continued to deal with Iran, and basically threaten and bully those countries, including these big aircraft manufacturers like Airbus, saying, "Well, if you supply Iran with goods, we are going to boycott you." And so this was a very pernicious thing that Trump did, and it's going to take a lot of putting back together again.
Sure.
But it's probably one of the most important jobs on the planet. And I would also point out that what's been going up in Glasgow at COP26 and much of this climate agenda has taken away a lot of attention from this much more important issue, in my view.
All right, we're going to unfortunately have to leave it there. Let me thank you there, Tony Gosling from Bristol, historian and investigative journalist, and from Edinburgh, John White. Thank you, writer and political analyst. And at the top of the spotlight, we had our correspondent, Homolesky, who gave us an update from Vienna. With that, we come to an end with this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tatvay and the entire team, is goodbye. Until next time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به وقت حالا.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, today we are going to discuss Imam Khomeini's views on armed forces and his recommendations on the issue which he has dealt with in his testament. Stay tuned, please. Armed forces are among the most important bases of security and stability of countries, as they are in the first to confront any foreign aggression and threat against public security. Formation of an army in the modern shape in Iran dates back to some two centuries. The formation of armed forces has undergone ups and downs, but during the Pahlavi rule, Iran's army became one of the equipped armies in the region, and in the second half of the 20th century, it was considered as the most powerful armies in the region and the world, thanks to the oil money that was generously spent to purchase American weapons and ammunition. In view of this, Iran's army turned into the gendarme of the region. Upon the fall of the Shah in February 1979, the Iranian army weakened for a short while, But with Saddam Hussein's Ba'athist army's attack on Iran in 1980, the Islamic Republic revised its armed forces and succeeded to prevent Saddam's expansionism and safeguard the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. The eight-year imposed war proved the high status of armed forces for the country. Hence, for the past three decades after the war, reinforcement of the armed forces has been one of the most important priorities of the Islamic Republic. This has its roots in the Islamic ideology. God says in Ayah 60 of Surah Anfal, prepare against them whatever you can of power. Imam Ali, peace upon him, writes in his famous letter to his top commander, Malik Ashtar, the soldiers are the fortresses of people, the ornament of rulers, the dignity of religion and the ways of security, and people will not last long except by them. The formation and strengthening of armed forces have been emphasized in the Constitution of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Accordingly, Iran's armed forces are divided into military and law enforcement forces with separate duties for each of them. The military forces consist of the Army and the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC. According to Iran's constitution, the Army is duty-bound to maintain the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the country, while the IRGC's duty is to maintain the Islamic Revolution and its achievements. The Constitution emphatically prohibits the membership of foreigners in the armed forces. Furthermore, establishment of any foreign base is forbidden in the Iranian soil, even for peaceful purposes. The leader of the Islamic Revolution is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. According to the importance of the armed forces in the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, dedicated parts of his testament to the issue. He writes, "The armed forces, including the army, the IRGC, police, committees, and basij, have a special characteristics. These forces, which are the strong arms of the Islamic Republic and the guardians of borders, ways, cities, villages, and finally the guards of security and comforters of the nation, should be paid a special attention by the nation, the government, and the parliament." Imam Khomeini warns against the role of big powers to make use of military forces in different countries for regime change and staging of coup d'etats. He writes in his testament, "Take heed that what in this world is abused by big powers and their destructive policies are the armed forces, as through political games, coups and regime changes are done by them, and the deceitful profiteers bribe some of their leaders and, through them, and the deceived commanders, take the countries in their hands, subjugate oppressed nations, and deny independence and freedom of these countries. And if virtuous commanders take the helms of power, there will never be the possibility of a coup or occupation of a country. And if there is, it will be defeated and unsuccessful by devoted commanders." Dear listeners, next time we will continue the discussion.
IRIB English Radio.